Hi, 22 Hours fans. Thanks for being loyal listeners to our podcast throughout this entire season. We'll be back next week with a new 22 Hours show. But in the meantime, we thought you might want to check out the new season of Murder Made Me Famous. The first episode dropped this week, and we're bringing it to you right here, right now. If you like what you hear, subscribe to the new season and binge season one. And we'll see you next week for our latest 22 Hours episode.
Hey, I'm Steve Helling, senior reporter for Murder Made Me Famous, Reels Channel's true crime program on Podcast One and Apple Podcasts. Be sure to download the Podcast One app and subscribe to our series. Then go to Reels.com, that's R-E-E-L-Z.com, to find true crime TV series like this one on Reels Channel.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised.
For almost two decades, a madman assaults, kills, and then dumps the bodies of young women around Seattle and its majestic Green River.
He targeted prostitutes and runaways and murdered them in the most barbaric of ways.
He would pay them, he would have sex with them, and then he would kill them to get his money back.
The killer often revisits his undiscovered victims to have sex with their corpses.
He cast a shadow, and that shadow has lasted decades.
He confesses to 71 murders, but many believe there are dozens more.
He needed sex often, and he got a lot of gratification from killing them.
Living a demonic double life, this wolf in sheep's clothing is a devoted husband, father, and church member who easily lures vulnerable girls into his trap.
He's very, very good at disarming women and victims psychologically.
But when DNA technology finally catches up to him, the world realizes the true extent of his horrific crimes.
He was your coworker, he was your neighbor and your friend, but he was a boogeyman living underneath the radar.
How did he get away with it for so long? That's what no one could understand.
Meet Gary Ridgway, a.k.a. the Green River Killer, a run-of-the-mill nobody, until murder made him famous. The savage murders committed by Gary Ridgway in the 80s and 90s shocked authorities and the public. His infamous deeds have been chronicled in movies, books, and television shows.
Writer, The Search for the Green River Killer, Tomas Guillen.
And even now, a lot of people are looking at television programs with a serial killer theme. So, big appetite, and I think he helped feed that appetite.
Gary Ridgway's name was even mentioned more than once on the CBS show Criminal Minds.
His legacy continues to terrify through urban legend and pop culture references. Ridgway inspired song lyrics, and a Seattle-based rock band even named themselves after the Green River Killer.
The Gary Ridgway case, Green River case, fueled, you know, our fascination with serial killers.
But his atrocities traumatized an entire generation of women in the Pacific Northwest who wondered if they would be his next victim. Though he's become known as one of the most notorious serial killers in U.S. history, Gary Ridgway's early life, at least on the surface, appears to be normal. He is the middle son of Mary Rita Steinman and Thomas Newton Ridgway.
Former reporter Linda Byron.
Gary Ridgway did not seem to have the kind of family that would produce a man with so much anger and so much hate and a drive to kill. It just didn't seem to fit.
Prosecutor Patty Eakes.
He came from a very middle-class family. There was nothing really that remarkable about him.
From an early age, Gary finds himself sexually attracted to his mother.
Ridgway's father was an overworked bus driver, and his mother was pretty overbearing. So more than once, he saw his parents arguing.
His father would say negative things about prostitutes and sex workers.
Damn nasty whores. They always want a free ride.
Do you realize the gutters still aren't clean and after I told you to do it last week? I hope you don't expect me to do it.
What are you looking at?
Gary's father was a rigid disciplinarian. His mother was a strong woman and described as being domineering at times.
One night, a young Ridgeway awakens to find he has wet himself.
Come here, Gary. Let's get you cleaned up.
Sorry.
When are you going to learn to control yourself?
We know that he was a bedwetter and that he wet his bed into his early teens and that his mother would bathe him even when he was in that puberty age.
And he became aroused, and then he would also become more aroused when her robe opened. He became confused with, it's mom, I like her, I love her, I want to do certain things, so, and you're not supposed to think that way.
When Ridgeway is 11, his family moves from Utah to Seattle, Washington. A poor reader and slow learner, Ridgeway struggles in school.
He was dyslexic and he had a low IQ. And ultimately, he was held back in school two times.
They wanted to put him in special ed, and he was horrified and humiliated by that. He always lived as if he had something to make up for.
At school, Ridgeway allegedly pays a girl to let him look at her genitals.
What are you crying for? You said you'd do it.
Eventually, Ridgeway reportedly begins to have violent fantasies about his mother.
He began getting fantasies of hurting her, slashing her, cutting her, because he was confused. So the bedwetting, washing, and then the criticism on the side, and then kids making fun of him because he was slow, started to create this psychology of annihilating thinking, hurting people, wanting to hurt people when they did him wrong. His anger is growing. Evolving. The dislike for women is starting to take shape.
At first, fantasy seemed the only way for him to deal with his feelings of lust and humiliation. But then, one day, he acted on it.
Former Detective Tom Jensen.
Gary had lured this little boy to a place to play.
Hey!
And he lured him into the woods and then attacked him with a knife.
Pierced his liver.
Oh, I always want to know what it felt like to kill somebody.
The boy almost died.
He says to see what it felt like. So he started getting thoughts of hurting people, and that might have been one of the first ones.
Since the boy doesn't know Ridgeway, he is unable to identify his assailant. The boy and his family move out of state shortly afterwards. Gary Ridgeway has successfully avoided police detection for the first of many times in his life. In 1969, at the age of 20, Ridgeway graduates high school and joins the Navy. In 1970, he marries his high school girlfriend, but they divorce after only a year and a half.
She took up with another man, and he was devastated and quite angry. And she basically sent him a Dear John letter saying it's over.
While he's in the Navy, Ridgeway goes to Vietnam, where he briefly sees combat. And he also starts visiting prostitutes.
And there was a lot of time that they had where they were on land and didn't really have anything to do. And it wasn't uncommon for these sailors to go and find prostitutes.
He has an insatiable sex drive. And in his acting out, he contracts gonorrhea twice.
In 1971, Ridgeway is honorably discharged from the Navy. He returns to Washington State and gets a painting job at the Kenworth Motor Truck Company.
Not long after his divorce, Ridgeway met Marcia Winslow, and they got married. And he introduced her to his love of the outdoors.
Gary? Gary! God, Gary! Jesus, Gary, you scared me. Come in.
He had a very insatiable appetite for sex. His wife said that he would sometimes demand sex 2 and 3 times a day. That wasn't enough. He had some kinky ideas about being outside. He liked to have sex outside.
In 1975, Ridgeway's wife, Marcia, gives birth to a baby boy. Over the next few years, the relationship between Gary and Marcia turns rocky.
It's not a new dress.
Yeah? You like it?
I do. It's very, becoming.
He was angry at her for betraying him. And he talked about feeling that she was one of those women who pushed him around and took advantage of him.
We were just talking.
You think he wants to just talk with you? Think again.
I can talk to whoever I want.
He had self-gratification, sexual release. That was the moment that his hate became together with violence.
Get out.
Marcia leaves Ridgway in 1981 and takes custody of their son. Soon after, Ridgway moves into a house near Pacific Highway South, which bisects Seattle, and begins frequenting prostitutes.
Pacific Highway was the primary corridor for prostitution at that time in the 80s.
Gary went out often. He needed to have sex 4 or 5 times a week, so he was out there all the time.
One night in 1982, Ridgway spots 16-year-old Wendy Lee Cofield.
Wendy is reportedly a high school dropout and a presumed runaway from Pierce County, which is over 40 miles away.
Hey there. Are you looking for a date?
Yeah.
He felt an incredible sense of power and control over these women after he would pick them up, trick them into thinking he was safe and he was a good guy.
His contempt for women has been growing. And now, no longer under the watchful eye of his wife, he takes his dark desires to a terrifying level.
Punishing every woman who he felt had ever betrayed him or had pushed him around or he had failed to stand up to.
On July 15th, 1982, two boys bicycling along the Peck Bridge noticed something below them in the Green River.
The boys discovered the body of Wendy Lee Cofield. She was naked except for her shoes and socks, and the rest of her clothes were knotted around her neck. She was only 16 years old.
Police will soon discover that this sadistic murder isn't an isolated attack, and the body count will soon rise. July 1982. A young girl has been brutally raped, murdered, and discarded like trash on the banks of the Green River in Washington State.
Gary Ridgway had a distorted view of women. And even though he had that low IQ, he became very good at convincing women to get into his truck so he could kill them.
In August 1982, Marcia Faye Chapman, mother of three, crosses paths with Gary Ridgway.
He would park his car at a convenience store or in a parking lot, and he would prop the hood up as if something was wrong, and then he would stand outside the car kind of watching the various women.
They were living on the streets, they were selling their bodies for sex, and Gary Ridgway knew that they could be taken advantage of.
Want a date tonight?
Yeah.
Marcia is an alleged prostitute who tells her kids that she's going to the store.
He would show women pictures of his son that he kept in his wallet in order to just show that he was a normal, non-threatening guy with a little kid.
But in reality, Gary Ridgway was far from normal. Three more Seattle-area women fall prey to Ridgway. and their disappearances get the attention of homicide detectives Dave Reichert and Faye Brooks. During their investigation, they search the Green River.
Hey, I think I see something.
Oh my God, is that another one?
Hidden in the foliage and anchored under rocks, police find the bodies of four Ridgeway victims. Deborah Lynn Bonner, Cynthia Jean Hines, Opal Charmaine Mills, and Marcia Faye Chapman.
It was shocking.
From 1982 to 1984, Gary Ridgeway, the Green River Killer, continues his manic killing spree. He hunts, rapes, and strangles his victims, and then disposes of their bodies.
15, 16 years old, 17, 18. You're talking about a lot of teenagers. Some had gone to puberty, some hadn't, and everybody was wondering, is it my daughter in danger, my wife, or who's in danger? Who are the victims?
He kills these women, sometimes in his truck, sometimes in his house, sometimes in the woods.
More bodies turn up in remote and forested areas around Seattle. They are usually nude or partially clothed and are all killed by strangulation.
Former Detective Faye Brooks.
From then on, it was just a matter of trying to identify the rest of the victims. There had to have been an obvious connection. What was it? They were white, black, Hispanic, tall, short. The commonality was that they were street people, street kids.
By the very nature of their jobs, prostitutes are easy prey for someone like Gary Ridgeway, especially if he's going to pay them money.
Really, your investigation is running against the clock. It's only a matter of time before another woman is picked up, another woman is killed, another woman is found. As a result, a lot of resources were immediately put into the case.
And at that point, the sheriff of King County says, we've got to do something about this. We've got to investigate this better. They formed a task force.
Detectives Dave Reichert and Tom Jensen are both members of the Green River Task Force. They have one goal in mind: to catch the serial murderer dubbed the Green River Killer.
But who were they really looking for? At that point, everything about Gary Ridgeway was unremarkable.
The profile that we've all heard of the serial killer is he's a loner, he's usually unmarried, he's not social, he comes from a broken home, he was killing animals, he was killing early. That wasn't Gary Ridgeway. He didn't look powerful, he was polite. He had a son. He wasn't what we expected he would be.
Giselle LaVorne is an alleged prostitute who loves the band The Grateful Dead. She's only 17 years old when Gary Ridgeway picks her up. He has brought his 7-year-old son, Matthew, along for the ride.
You looking for a date?
Yeah.
What about him?
He's fine.
He picked her up, told his son to stay in the car, said they were going for a walk, took her into the woods.
Gary Ridgeway was like a serial killer savant. He stumbled onto a method that that worked really well for him. He would often convince them that if they did it doggy style, he would be faster. So he had them in a very vulnerable position. What he told us he did was he would just say, "What's that?" And the girl, if she had her head down, she would be looking up, and he would be able to get her, his arm around her neck.
Then he would attack the woman, typically from behind, and he would choke her to death.
His son didn't know. His son was a child. He just waited patiently for his father.
Matthew Ridgeway's father returns to the truck alone.
Hey, Dad, where'd that lady go?
She decided to walk home.
Years later, Matthew Ridgway will tell reporters that he had no idea that his father was anything other than a normal dad. Once details of the Green River site go public, the murderer starts dumping bodies in other places, making investigators' jobs even harder.
Whenever we would find a victim, it was on the front page. It was on the news, breaking news. He was watching the news. So he knew, oh, they found that location, and he would go somewhere else.
Ridgway disposes of his victims in the woods. Sometimes he intentionally spreads debris, such as cigarette butts, receipts, and airport pamphlets around the bodies. He does so in the hopes that the police will think a traveling salesman could be the killer. Ridgway's depraved deeds know no bounds. Victim Mary Meehan is just 19 years old and over 8 months pregnant. Her remains are discovered approximately a year later.
And not only were they found in more secluded areas, but they were even found further away from the Seattle area.
As the body count climbs to over a dozen, the Green River Task Force receives thousands of phone calls from concerned citizens.
Hey, what's up?
We just got another tip on a missing girl.
From who? The family? A pimp.
Pimps are useless. They just say the girl's run away.
Initially, we thought possibly it was a pimp. We thought maybe it was someone who was pretending to be a cop because it seemed like they were getting into the car so quickly, so easily. Maybe that's what it was.
The problem is this is the only two sources we're getting any information from at all. What other lead sources do we have out there?
We don't. We're going to have to start canvassing again. We got to find someone who actually saw something.
We're going to need to pull more guys in on this.
If they'll give us the manpower.
The public was behind us 100%, and everybody had a suspect. And so we were getting a lot of calls, and we could barely keep up with it.
I think at one point we had probably 40 investigators, including FBI, working on the case because there were so many suspects, there were so many missing people.
We spent so much time recovering remains and trying to identify them that there wasn't really much time to work on the suspects that much anymore. We were overwhelmed by the number of recoveries that we were making.
The problem with this case and Gary was that there are too many men who want to hurt women. There are too many men who are violent.
During their investigation into the murders, the Green River Task Force receives an offer of help from the unlikeliest of sources.
Looks like the lab sent us over some new pictures.
Hey, Riker, you got a call.
I don't have time for it right now.
You're going to want to take this one.
This unlikely source is someone whom Reichert and fellow task force agent Robert Keppel had previously investigated. The infamous murderer, Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy was smart. He was social. Gary Ridgway was 180 degrees the opposite. His IQ is low. He wasn't attractive. He wasn't charismatic. It's hard to imagine how he convinced all of these women to get in the car with him. And in the end, I think he was just really good at one thing, and that was killing people, killing these women.
Bundy suggests that when police find a fresh grave, that they stake it out. Because if the killer is anything like Ted Bundy, he'll come back to have sex with the dead bodies.
He didn't have money to go pick up another woman and have sex with her.
Gary Ridgway will later reveal he has sex with the corpses of his victims because necrophilia is less risky than killing another woman. Ted Bundy's gruesome insight could prove to be the crack in the case that cops need to catch the Green River Killer.
Hey, it's Steve Helling. If you like what you're hearing, check out the dark and gritty crime mysteries on your TV on Reels channel. There are horrifying true stories of murderers like killer clown John Wayne Gacy and Chris Watts, the Denver dad who killed his pregnant wife and daughters and thought he got away with it. Then check out the Reels medical mystery series Autopsy that reveals what really killed screen and music legends like Robin Williams, Lucille Ball, Prince, and Johnny Cash. You can find Reels on your TV at Reels.com. That's Reels.com. Then check the top of the screen to find Reels in your area.
Hey, Jordan here. I know a lot of you create your own podcasts, and a lot of you already have one like me. I obviously love what I do. It's taken a lot of hard work to get to this point of success. You shouldn't have to pay fees for platform hosting, distribution, analytics, or fees to create a podcast. You need to be able to focus on producing the best show possible. Now, Podcast One, that's a network I'm on, they have Launchpad Digital Media, or Launchpad DM for short. So it's free, includes unlimited hosting, full control of distribution. You have access to a full dashboard with analytics. Again, totally free. You own everything, by the way. You own your content, you own your subscribers, no tricky stuff there. And you get your own show page on launchpaddm.com for people to listen to and subscribe to your show. It's the only hosting platform brought to you by the leading network, Podcast One. Podcast One will promote the site, drive people to discover your podcast, and if your show grows, you could even be invited to join Podcast One's all-star roster, which includes people like Adam Carolla, Caitlin Bristow, Shaq, Lady Gang, and of course, me, Jordan Harbinger. I'm there too. You also get access to their production and sales support. So with all this completely free, don't use other hosting platforms. Why would you need to? Learn more or sign up now at launchpaddm.com. And don't forget to check out The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This program contains graphic violence and sexual situations. Viewer discretion is advised.
In the early 80s, the woods surrounding Seattle, Washington have become a dumping ground for corpses thanks to the Green River Killer. From death row in Florida, convicted serial killer Ted Bundy contacts the Green River Task Force to offer advice.
Ted Bundy offered to help police produce a profile for the Green River Killer. He wanted to lend his expertise.
Bundy had a hunch that the killer would come back to visit the bodies. This was another way for him to control women and to have sex whenever he wanted.
Police take Bundy's advice and stake out a fresh grave in the woods. But the killer never shows. In November 1982, Ridgway solicits 20-year-old telemarketer and occasional prostitute, Rebecca Gardet. Rebecca and Ridgway allegedly agreed to exchange $20 for a sexual act.
What's the matter? Ain't you feeling it? Yeah, that's right.
Gary took her out into a wooded area, was in the process of getting oral sex, and they tried to strangle her. She managed to get away from him and escape and run to a nearby house where they called the police and he got away.
Years later, Ridgway admitted to choking Rebecca, but he said it was self-defense after she bit him.
These are prostitutes. Who's going to believe them?
In 1983, Ridgway pulls over to solicit sex from 18-year-old prostitute Marie Malvar. Marie's boyfriend, who's also her pimp, is watching nearby.
Looking for a date?
Uh-huh.
How do I know you're gonna treat me good? You could be the maniac killing all these girls for all I know.
I'm not gonna look like the Green River Killer. He's a big guy, so I'm like 6'3".
Because he didn't look like a killer, it was easy for him to get young girls to get in his car.
The problem was is that, young as they were, they thought they knew the streets. They were little girls lost. Some or many had been abused at home, and so they were running away from violence, and so they ran to the streets.
What drew him to these women was this desire to feel like he had beautiful women or attractive women who were sexually attracted to him. Of course, he found the women were easily available and willing to engage in whatever acts he wanted.
Ridgway has just finished having sex with prostitute Marie Malvar at his home in Seattle. And as with all his previous victims, he strangles her.
Get off me! Get off me!
During her struggle to break free, Malvar inflicts deep scratches on Ridgway's arm.
She fought back when he tried to kill her.
Although she puts up a fight, Marie Malvar has no chance against Ridgway.
I'd actually seen Ridgway's vehicle.
And Marie's boyfriend was suspicious of this particular guy and followed them to the house and alerted authorities.
Gary Ridgway?
Yeah, that's me.
You ever seen this woman before?
No, sir.
You sure?
We have reports of a man matching your description soliciting prostitutes down at the SeaTac Strip.
I've had a few dates, now that you mention it.
What about her? You ever seen her before?
Maybe. She's kind of familiar. Looks sort of like a gal who bit me once.
She bit you? What was that about?
She bit me.
And then what happened?
Like, pushed her out of my truck. That's what happened. It was self-defense.
He talked his way out of it. And that's a pivotal moment where many, many lives could have been saved if there had been more follow-up. It's possible Gary Ridgway would have been caught.
When police leave, Gary Ridgway attempts to conceal the scratches inflicted on him by Marie Malvar.
Ridgway covered up the scratches with battery acid. It was one of many close calls that he had with the cops.
On edge from his run-ins with the police, Ridgway takes his son camping in the neighboring state of Oregon.
Hey, Dad, I'm going to go fishing at the creek.
All right, I'll be there in a second. These bags out of here.
It is there where he deposits the remains of two bodies inside trash bags.
Ridgway left body parts of his victims around Oregon to throw cops off the scent from Seattle. And when police discovered the remains, they thought maybe the killer was moving south.
Back in Washington State, a police officer spots Gary Ridgway emerging from the woods. He has just finished having sex with a cadaver.
Excuse me, sir. Can you tell me what you're doing back there in the woods?
You caught me.
After murdering countless young women, has the Green River Killer finally been caught? Or will he slip through law enforcement's fingers again? 1983, Washington State. Serial killer Gary Ridgway walks out of the woods and right into a police officer.
Excuse me, sir. Can you tell me what you're doing back there in the woods?
You caught me. Couldn't hold it any longer, so I stopped to take a leak.
Well, that's understandable. I've had to do that a couple of times myself. Now listen, be careful in this area, okay?
Will do.
Some bad people running around.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
He says, well, I'm just urinating. And I believe he was just feet away from a body where he was having sex.
Despite another close call, the Green River Killer is undeterred. In 1983, Ridgway murders waitress and young mother Carol Christensen. On Mother's Day, her body is discovered propped against a tree. He poses her with two trout on her torso, a sack on her head, an empty bottle of wine across her stomach, and a pile of sausages on her hands. Some speculate this bizarre scene is an attempt to throw off the task force.
Carol's death was nothing like the killer's M.O., and it made cops wonder, was the killer trying to send a message, or was he just taunting them?
in 1984, 2 years after escaping the clutches of Gary Ridgway, Rebecca Gardet reports her terrifying run-in to police.
There had been a string of murders by this point, and the Green River Task Force was on high alert. Gary Ridgway was on their list, so they brought him in for a polygraph.
Do you have any children?
Yes.
Have you ever paid for sexual services?
Yes.
Have you ever assaulted a woman?
Yes.
Did you kill Wendy Coffin?
No.
Did you kill Marie Malbar?
No.
We're done.
Ridgway was reportedly calm and relaxed as he took his polygraph, so he passed it with flying colors. Cops had no choice but to let him go again.
That was a real missed opportunity, because when he passed that lie detector test, they moved on. They set his name to the side.
In 1985, 4 years after his divorce from his previous wife, Marcia, Ridgway starts dating Judith Mawson.
They met in Parents Without Partners, one of these social clubs for people who have lost spouses or suffered divorce, and they connected immediately.
I think that the women that he met didn't have great emotional needs. He did like to have sex a lot. I mean, Judith described their marriage as every day was a honeymoon.
Ridgway had held the same job for 15 years, and he was close with his mother. So to someone like Judith, that signified stability, and she liked him. The two of them together came up with a hobby of salvaging old junk and selling it at garage sales.
Unbeknownst to Judith, Gary secretly skims cash from the garage sale earnings.
So the money that was coming from the garage sales, he was able to use at his discretion without any visibility to Judith.
With few leads, the Green River Task Force is still keeping a very close eye on Gary Ridgway.
Gary Ridgway was on the radar pretty early on. He was one of two main suspects. He had a history of arrests for soliciting prostitutes, so he was someone they looked at.
Though he's previously passed a polygraph test, Ridgway remains a prime person of interest to police. As a result, police get a warrant to search Gary Ridgway's home and his cars. They believe they'll find the evidence they need to finally catch their killer.
They just collected a lot of evidence. One of the things that we did get was a swab that was used generally done just for a saliva test.
I don't understand. What are they looking for?
I don't know. They just got the wrong house, is all. Don't cry.
But he was very good at what he did, and he was able to evade police, and they didn't find the evidence that they were expecting.
Cops collected carpet fibers, ropes, and they also collected hair and saliva.
Police also collect paint samples from Ridgway's place of work, where he is employed as an auto body painter.
The problem was that DNA technology wasn't fully developed yet, so they couldn't really test it, so it just sat on a shelf somewhere.
Ridgway convinces Judith that the search is a misunderstanding. They marry in June of 1988, and his killing spree slows down.
The media was really focused on the case back in the 1980s when the bodies were being found, what seemed like every day, every week. And then for such a long period of time, nobody was identified, and the killings kind of went to the back burner, so to speak.
People had kind of forgotten about the Green River Killer. It was assumed he's either dead or he's in jail because these murders have stopped.
People who were in charge of the funds said, basically, we need to get these people back to doing their regular job because they're not finding any victims.
After a few years without success in catching the Green River Killer, the task force was reduced to one person. One detective, Tom Jensen, and that was it.
Tom was always thinking about the case, and it was the only case that he worked on for a very long time, and he was dogged about it.
Meanwhile, just a few miles away, Gary Ridgway was living his life just like he always had.
He had a job, he had a son, he had a wife, he went to church, he was stable, he was everything a serial killer isn't.
During Gary Ridgway's almost 10-year marriage, the rate of his murders slows down considerably. But on November 16th, 2001, almost 20 years after his murder spree began, he succumbs to an urge and solicits a prostitute.
Hey there.
You looking for a date?
Yeah.
But this prostitute was different from any of his other victims, and she was about to give him the surprise of his life.
Gary Ridgway has just met his match, and this prostitute does something that none of the Green River Killer's victims have dared to do before. In November of 2001, Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, once again solicits a prostitute.
30.
Yeah. Yeah, 30's good.
You now have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in court of law.
This prostitute is an undercover police officer. She doesn't know it, but she has just caught the Green River Killer. Ridgway is arrested and jailed for solicitation.
When he was arrested, he asked cops not to call his wife. And then he said that they could contact the Green River Task Force because they knew him really well. Apparently not well enough, because they let him go again.
By this point, Ridgway has been terrorizing women for almost 20 years. The last remaining member of the task force, Detective Tom Jensen, follows the evidence.
I was always aware that we had these samples, and I monitored the science of DNA.
I mean, nobody had an idea that science would evolve to the point that we would be able to make positive connections between people based on minuscule amounts of degraded DNA.
As soon as DNA science has developed enough for an accurate result, Tom Jensen submits Gary Ridgway's DNA for testing.
This was our last chance. Let's see what we can get.
They called me up, said, you got to come down here to the lab because I'm going to tell you. And they laid it out for me. One of the samples, they got a pretty strong match. And the other one, they were developing a match on that one. Both of them matched Gary Ridgway.
The DNA match proved that he had had sex with some of the victims. But they didn't prove that he had killed them. So cops needed more.
Gary Ridgway has held a steady job as a painter for decades at Kenworth Trucking. Detective Tom Jensen believes the paint can be a gold mine.
If you've ever spray painted something, you'll know that there's always residue around, and it's just in the form of dust, and it was all over his clothes.
And when that paint was analyzed, it was a very specific kind of paint that was only used at Kenworth Trucking.
Police finally have the evidence to arrest Gary Ridgway. They wait for him outside his place of work.
Gary Ridgway.
Yeah.
You're under arrest. You have the right to remain
2001. After almost two decades of murders, the Green River Killer is finally in custody. Meanwhile, Ridgway's wife, Judith, is visited by police and told that her husband is the Green River Killer. But she initially refuses to believe it.
She really was devoted to him. I think she really believed that he was wrongly accused.
Investigators can now connect Ridgway to at least seven of the murdered women, but they suspect he is responsible for dozens more.
We basically went back through history and looked at least 75 unsolved murder cases to see if we could tie any of them to Ridgway.
The defense attorneys came up with a plan where Ridgway would help the detectives solve the unsolved murders that were out there. But they needed something in return.
Basically, we took the death penalty off the table. There would be no death penalty in exchange for his confessions.
Certainly, if anybody deserves to be sentenced to death, Ridgway is that person. However, the greater good was far more important.
The police have many unidentified bodies that they believe could be Ridgway victims. Police set up a special room so they can observe and question Ridgway at will.
Gave him a table to sit at and write, and he was our house guest for 6 months.
Ridgway almost never showed any emotion throughout the 6 months that we interviewed him. I'm not sure that Gary's capable of feeling regret, to be honest.
You killed them all, Ridgway. You killed them all.
Mm-hmm.
Once he began confessing, he had a great deal of difficulty sorting out his victims. Basically, what he could remember is where he left them.
The team takes Ridgway on field trips into the forest to locate the bodies of missing women.
He pointed those spots out, so now we knew that some of the cases that we had suspected might be related but had never made a positive link were now part of his victims.
Maria Malvar was a woman who for many years was on the list. Ridgway was able to take us to the location of where he said he had left her body. And after much searching of that area and clearing of the area by a large team of people, we were able to find her remains. I remember just being so elated in some ways. I mean, I know that sounds crazy, but also just enormously relieved that, you know, we had actually done what we had hoped and promised we'd be able to do, which was to find some additional remains.
On November 5th, 2003, Ridgway pleads guilty to 48 charges of aggravated first-degree murder. He also claims to have killed an additional 23 women.
It was the saddest case I've ever covered because the courtroom was filled with fathers and brothers and sisters and daughters and mothers of these young women whose lives were just cut short. People were sobbing and crying and angry. Some of his victims' relatives stood up and said, "I hope he dies in prison."
Judge Richard Jones sentences Ridgway to 48 life sentences, plus 480 years for tampering with evidence.
Gary Ridgway is in a maximum security prison. He is serving multiple life sentences. He'll never get out of prison, but he's alive. And many of the families of his victims find that to be the hardest thing of all, that the Green River Killer didn't get the death penalty.
Gary Ridgway was a normal guy. He was the guy that would be sitting next to you in church. He was the guy who you would meet in your neighborhood and say, "Oh, I met a good guy. We should have him over for dinner." Nobody thought he was capable of the brutality and the murders that he ultimately confessed to doing.
Never underestimate who you're dealing with, because the killer doesn't look like what you think he looks like.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Murder Made Me Famous. Don't forget to subscribe at podcastone.com with the Podcast One app or at Apple Podcasts. Then go to reels.com, that's reelz.com, for clips, extras, and more from the TV version of the series, including chilling reenactments and crime scene photos that you'll only see on Reels Channel. Find Reels on your TV or at reels.com. I'm Steve Helling.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.